Hi, I'm Dan Barber from Blue Hill and Blue Hill at Stone Barns. You are listening to Food Fridays on the Leonard Lopate Show.
You wouldn't think that winter is the best time to go out in search of ingredients in the wild that you might want to eat, but Tama Matsuoka Wong begs to differ, and she should know. She makes a living as a professional forager for chefs like Daniel Ballou and Mads Refslund, and she is the author of Forage Flavor for Clarkson Potter. I'm delighted to welcome her back to our show today on this rather frigid day. Hi.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks for having me again.
So do you go out foraging even when it's this cold with snow in the forecast?
Yes, we were out yesterday.
Is it easier or more difficult this time of year when there are so many leaves on the ground?
Actually, there's snow where we are right now, and it is more difficult.
In New Jersey.
Yes.
So does that make it easier to spot some of these things?
It's easier to spot some things, but there's fewer things around.
But you suggested it's a good time to find nuts.
Well, the nuts we got a little earlier because we have snow, but definitely trees are easy to spot now.
Well, other than what we hear from Washington politicians, has this been a good year for nuts?
Fantastic. Really, bumper crop.
I heard last year wasn't, and I wonder why they vary from year to year.
I mean, I don't know if people really studied it, but trees in the wild have mast years so that, you know, certain trees like beech nuts only come every 3 to 5 years. So, you know, when you get a good year, you really have to go for it.
So this is a good year for all the trees that want to reproduce themselves?
I noticed a huge amount of hickory. It's been a bummer. I've never seen in 10 years so many hickory nuts.
The shag bark hickory nuts?
Yes, especially. Then those are, I think, the most delicious that I have found.
Now, they're native to the area,
yes,
aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Aren't they one of the few nuts that Native Americans ate raw?
Yes, it's one of the few nuts. Some nuts, they say that's better to toast or dry because they have an enzyme in them that if you eat a lot of it, it doesn't digest. But the shagbark nuts are actually eaten raw.
And how do you recognize them? What do they look like?
Well, it's very easy. I would look first at the tree. It's really easy to tell the tree because the bark exfoliates. It falls off like it's shaggy.
What are those shaggy trees?
Yeah, like a shaggy
I always
tree.
Wonder about those shaggy trees if they're unhealthy, but that's just their natural look.
It's naturally peeling off, so you're not even having to, you know, hurt. So then you can look for the nuts under the tree.
Oh, the nuts have fallen by the time we eat them.
Yes.
We don't.
Yes,
so
they're not. They're very tall trees, so I'm not trying to.
And I'm assuming that when they fall, that means they're also ripe because. Nuts have to ripen just like every other
thing. Yeah, so
thing.
They're falling. They're inside kind of a, you know, a husk, and then you peel it off and you seal the nutshell inside.
Well, doesn't the husk stain your fingers?
No, the walnut husks do that, but not the hickory. Hmm. So the black walnut, there's a whole different thing you have to do, which is quite onerous.
And how difficult are they to open?
The hickory nuts are much harder than nuts that you see in the supermarket. So we found the best way is to crack it lightly with a hammer on some kind of stone.
Can you spot if they're of good quality?
The easiest way to tell the quality, which is what people have been doing, I think, for generations, is use the floater method, which is that you throw them all into a big bucket of water, and the ones that float are suspect.
The ones that float are because they have air inside.
Yes, they're lighter. That means that maybe there's weevils, so the weevils may have gotten at them, or they may, you know, be older.
And what do they taste like?
Taste amazing.
I mean, the ones that don't float.
Oh, I actually did. Oh, the ones that floated, some of them are still okay, so I don't throw them out. But if I'm going to sell them, I try use the floater method. The hickory nuts are absolutely amazing because they're kind of sweet and buttery all the way to the end. So it doesn't, at the end, you get that sometimes little, almost like shell-like taste when you eat a nut. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have that. It's just completely sweet and buttery.
And can you also cook with them?
Yes, you can cook with them, roast them, have them with sort of like a mushroom crust on some meat. And we also have a recipe for shortbread hickory nut cookies, which is really good.
Wow. Well, you brought some things, but you didn't bring the nuts, did you?
I did.
Oh, you did?
You want to try?
I see that you brought some hickory bark, but this is ground up?
No, that's the Wong method. Oh. So you can see.
You don't mind if I eat? It tastes kind of like walnut.
Yeah, it's actually in the same family as walnut and pecan, but it's almost like a cross between them.
Well, that's nice. pecans right now are really hard to get. They're incredibly expensive.
Although I do have someone in Charleston.
And these are free if you just find the right tree?
Yeah, and some people I know, they're like Mike Anthony at Gramercy Tavern. His parents have so many of them that they were sending them to him because they have it all over. I think it's Ohio or something. So it's really all over the place this year.
And you also brought some hickory bark. Now, that just looks like the bark of a tree.
Yes, like a house shingle.
Uh-huh. Is that easily pulled off?
Yeah, so this is the bark of the same tree I was talking about, that it's so easy to identify. And you just take some off. You don't have to cut the tree or hurt it at all. Just take a little bit off, and it just looks like
a thin piece of wood.
And this is the thing that I think we're so excited about, we meaning my whole family, because I am working with the pastry chef, new pastry chef at Gramercy Tavern. He made this into this ice cream. And so I was like, okay, I tasted the ice cream. It was good, but I was still skeptical. So you toast this. It just looks like, like a piece of wood. I'm holding like a shingle, like a house shingle, really, don't you think? But when you toast it, it starts to get this toasty flavor in the oven for about 8 minutes. But it's still kind of toasty. I mean, it's smoky, toasty kind of flavor. But then you put it on the stove with milk. You heat the milk, simmer, and then you let it to infuse. And it's the infusion time that this caramelly, buttery, kind of sweet flavor starts to come out and fills your entire kitchen. It's amazing.
Would you have washed it off first? I'm always afraid of just taking something off of a tree that birds and other insects have been crawling over for a while.
Well, crawling by an insect, it doesn't really bother me. And I mean, you would inspect it and see if you see any, bird droppings on it. And you are putting it in an oven. So if you feel uncomfortable, you could wash it. But at home, we do not wash our bark.
Tam, I often wonder, how does somebody figure that out?
What, the spark thing?
Yeah, taking the bark, putting it in an oven, then later infusing milk with it, then making ice cream out of the milk.
So everything that I am forging, I research. I have all these huge, geeky ethnobotanical books and from different countries. So I've actually found that this is indigenous to this area. And the American Indians did, besides the nuts, they actually, instead of sap, they actually used the bark from the hickory tree. And they used it two ways. They would boil it as a syrup. Mm-hmm. And they would also use it for smoking boar and meat.
Well, hickory smoked meats
are
common.
Started
it would be
then.
That same kind
same
of piece
kind
of meat?
Of thing, yes.
Oh, of wood?
Yes.
Now, what can you tell us about juniper berries? Are they also around at this time of year?
I'm on this huge jag right now on juniper berries, which I also brought.
But juniper berries smell like ammonia, don't they? That doesn't very
appetizing.
No,
because it's different. Like the turpentine thing, that's the juniper that you see in the store, which is a different species. That's Juniperus communis, common juniper. This is our local native indigenous juniper. And it's just more, it's sweeter. It's not as turpentine-y. Here I've ground it up and put it with some sugar as a juniper sugar. It's filling Leonard's office.
Incredible smell. I'm not sure. It smells like something I recognize, but I'm not sure what it is.
But it's kind of piney and sweet, but still, there's a kind of forestiness to it, I think.
And when do you pick them?
Now.
When they're green?
Oh, well, the green is a completely different thing we can talk about. It's amazing, really amazing. But right now, they're really ripe. And it's a good, like we talked about good years, it's a good year. Last year, could hardly find any.
And ripe is what, red?
No, it's sort of, I'm holding it. It's kind of bluish and black, but actually the blue and the black is dissimilar. It just has a little, if you rub the blue, you'll see it's really black.
Well, it looks just like something you'd find on a pine tree, but with little berries, reddish, purplish berries.
Yeah, they're sort of bluish black, I think.
Well, even though I'm now speaking to our audience, you might not go out foraging today. Tama Matsuoka Wong has, and she has brought some treasures that she found in the wild with her. She is a professional forager and author of Foraged Flavor from Clarkson Potter. Do you have recipes for any of these things in that book? Or these new things?
I do have recipes for some things. And I also am now writing a monthly column for a food blog called Serious Eats. So you can also get like the bark ice cream recipes in there because it's new. So, I didn't have it when I was doing the book, but some of them are also in the book.
Now, when you bring these things home, can you cook with them immediately, or do you have to dry some of them out?
I think the juniper, you can cook definitely the bark and the nuts immediately. The juniper you can dry. It does have a lot of moisture in it, so if you dry it, it lasts longer. If it has moisture in it, then I know some people that are pickling it, so they would do it right away.
They pickle it as well?
Yes.
You sent us a recipe for winter cauliflower soup with crushed juniper berries.
That's really good.
That uses less than a handful of ingredients, and we've actually put a link to that on our show page. But you say it's important to blanch the cauliflower florets first. And then you do something that I've never seen before. You brown the butter and then pass it through a piece of cheesecloth? Why?
Well, that is a recipe that I did with Eddie LaRue at Restaurant Daniel. So basically, that's partly so that the little bits don't get through. So it's like a little butter and it's smoother.
You're getting rid of all the fat from the butter.
Yeah.
You also shared a recipe for wild Barbary rice pudding. I've never heard of Barbary before. What do they look like?
Oh, okay, so...
Or wait, isn't it a European thing?
There is a European Barbary, but... and actually, Thoreau used to walk around, and he has a book called Wild Fruits, and he said that he used to go Barbary picking as one of his delights, but it turns out it was a European Barbary, which is eradicated, I think, in the 30s, because they thought it did something to the farms. So what is left now that we have all over and still out now, if you go out into the woods, in the understory, a lot of the red berries that have thorns on them now are Asian barberry.
Asian, how did they come here?
I think they were brought over as an ornamental plant that has now become an invasive plant.
And you say that, well, then that's really good to pick them because
yes,
we don't want
good.
It to spread any
and
more
fact,
than necessary.
How I found so many of this is because New Jersey Conservation called me up and said, are you still looking for barberries?
You say it's good to wait until after a heavy frost before you harvest the berries?
Yeah, at least after a frost. Before then, it doesn't seem to have as much flavor and it doesn't have as much, like when you have to food, for me, I food mill it, and so it has a lot of the pulp. But somehow before then, it's not as, you know, a peak time. But of course now, we're completely into peak time.
And why do you pair it with rice pudding?
Because it has this taste that's sort of like a wild raspberry with a twiggy kick at the end. And it seems to go really well with kind of like a smooth thing, like a rice pudding or a yogurt or, you know, something in that kind of, or ice cream. It would go well.
And the recipe includes a way of making a coulis.
Yes. The coulis is really like the jam, but you're not having to make it into jam. It's just kind of the puree. It's very easy.
You also say it's okay to use pine needles.
Oh, yes. You said you had a big pine tree in your backyard
mm-hmm.
in Greenpoint, right? So, yes, pine is also very much a big thing to forage now and very easy to identify. The American Indians actually used to use that as a tea. And I did try this on my daughters, and they didn't like it. But you can use there's a lot of ways you can use it. So one
– It's a good source of vitamin C.
It's a great source. And if you think what did people do when they didn't have lemons in the winter and for vitamin C, they would have things like pine needles and some of these other items.
And you say your daughter didn't like it. What was wrong?
Well, they didn't like it in the tea because that's what I had read. They said it tasted like pine sole. So
like they imagine pine
yes.
salt would taste.
And so really now for smoking, you know, you can put meat or fish and you smoke the pine and you get this great pine flavor in there. Also, you can make like a powder with it and sprinkle it on top of things.
And you've given us a recipe for pine needle oil.
Yes, that is also from Foraged Flavor. And also that's, again, Eddie LaRue's using that extensively at their restaurant.
In what way? What would he put it on?
He's putting it on fish. So you have like a pine oil on fish, and then sometimes he'll put little toasted pine needles with that and mushrooms.
Mm.
So pine and mushrooms go really well. The Japanese used to traditionally serve matsutake mushroom with pine needle smoked underneath.
These things that you've brought have really powerful odors, smells, whatever. I'm sitting here just
smelling the juniper.
Yeah, and they're just wonderful. Just
it's supposed to be very, very good for the health too.
Is there much you can find that's green? What about wild onions?
Well, last week before it snowed, yes, I was foraged wild onions, and it will probably come back when it thaws. It's the easiest thing to find and identify.
Well, where would I go looking for all of these things? I can't go into the parks because I think it's illegal to forage in the parks.
Well, you have your pine tree in your backyard.
Yeah, and, but I want a hickory tree now.
I can bring you some bark. Or talk to, you know, if you have any friends that, you know, live out and have, you know, live near trees, see for them to go out and look. People have told me they're walking along and they see, you know, now they recognize the bark falling off and they can recognize the hickory bark.
Are you ever astonished when you look back on your life and think, I used to be a corporate attorney?
Yeah, it's very strange. And I think I'm sometimes kind of crazy if I think about it too much.
You think you're kind of crazy? You seem to be enjoying this a lot.
Yes, it is. It's very fulfilling.
Tama Matsuoka Wong, her book Forage Flavor is published by Clarkson Potter, and she is also the principal of Meadows and More, which she founded to connect people and wild plants and natural landscapes. And thank you so much for coming on again. I have to start looking for
hickory
trees and barberries.
Thanks.